Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's December 18th, 2015. You're listening to the best poker cast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Jar Jar Binks.
I was just going to launch into, like, the theme song from Star Wars or something, but I'm not really sure if I could pull that off. And I don't know. Do you have to pay, like, copyrights or anything like that for humming a song on a show? I don't know.
You just got to use the force.
You know, they've done so many freaking parodies of that movie series that I can't imagine they'd come after us if
that's
I wanted
true.
To.
That's true. Of all the Star Wars movies, the best one, of course, still remains Spaceballs.
Spaceballs. Pizza the Hut. I love when they're looking into the TV screen, then they look back, and you see it going on ad infinitum all the way through. That's
that
awesome.
This is now. What will be now again? Great movie. Mel Brooks is awesome, isn't it?
Yeah, that was a great movie.
No spoilers here on Star Wars, but all my friends were telling me that I was like, oh, I'm going to go tomorrow and see it. And they're like, you got tickets already? And I'm like, no. And they're like, you ain't going to see that movie tomorrow.
No.
And I'm like, what? Really? Went on this morning, bought a ticket. There's only three showings that are sold out in our area.
Wow. Yeah, I'm going to wait till.
And I'm
like
doing
after.
The IMAX 3D thing, too.
I wait because I hate going to the movies.
Oh my gosh, I love the movies.
Well, I love the movies, but I don't like going with people.
I love overpaying for the popcorn. I like the big 64-ounce thing of soda that you can. Now they have these machines now. You can mix all kinds of stuff, like do a suicide like you just get off the Little League field.
You got to remember, it's the people I can't stand, not the movie experience. They're always coughing, hacking.
You don't travel as much as
talking.
I do, so I mean, people in the movie are way more tolerable than people on airplanes. So.
I got to tell you, the last movie I saw was a Spotlight, which was great.
Oh, you saw Spotlight?
Yeah.
I liked it.
Yeah, that was a great movie. Well, you know. So, but you're in there. Of course, I went during a matinee, so I was the youngest person in there by 25 years.
Of course, yeah. We went at the 10 a.m. showing. $5.62.
Wow. I did like that.
I felt like I was robbing him. I'm like, please don't. Oh, hey, there's a security guard over there. Don't let him know I got this ticket for $5.62.
But they're just always. And then you know what's funny is, you know, they're sitting behind you, right? First of all, the first time we go, it was just me and Gene were sitting there. And we're the only ones in the theater right now. And I'm like, wow, it's going to be cool. This is perfect. You know?
This guy comes in and sits right next
to us.
Why
first,
is that?
First, they sit behind us, directly behind us, one row. And then they get up, they move into our row, and sit two away from Gene.
You can bank on that. That is guaranteed, 100%. You're the only two people in the theater. The next person come in is going to sit on your lap. I don't understand it.
I don't get it. They got the entire theater to choose from.
I might be upset. I'm like, oh, look at this cute couple that took my damn seats. But I'm not going to sit right next to you. I'm going to go two rows somewhere else. And, I mean, come on.
I mean, it's one thing if they're doing the Sheldon Cooper thing where they're trying to find the optimal place to sit for audio. And they're like, meh, meh. And they're trying to sit like right next, you know. But they were right behind me. Then they sat next to us. I'm like, are you kidding me?
It happens every time.
And the other thing is they end up surrounding you. And they're all 80 or 90. So when the guy's like, what'd they say?
Yep.
And the woman's like, well, he said this. And she's screaming it in my ear. And I'm like, lady, we're trying to watch this movie. Oh, man. So I hate going to the movies for that. I love going to the movies. I just hate that part. So I like to stay home, wait till the DVD comes out in 90 days, but this movie's going to break every record on the planet, so I'm probably going to wait till after Christmas.
Yeah, see, the problem is I'm not a huge Star Wars fan, but I like it, and I'm less of a fan of having people spoil movies for me. So the only reason I'm going tomorrow on this, because you know these freaky freaks are going to ruin it somehow. So I just got to hold out one day, and then I'll know it, and then I can be one of the freaky freaks that ruins it by accident.
Well, I'm going to have to see it before we do the next show then. I don't want you saying something about it next week on the opening of the show or something.
All right, well, I guess since this is still a poker podcast, at least it was as of last week, we should probably talk about poker at some point, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Oh, it's an exciting show because it's our Conkies episode.
Conkies! You know, we have so many new listeners, I feel like we should explain the Conkies again.
Actually, I think what we should do is have listeners explain it to us, because when I mentioned to you the other day that, hey, maybe we should do the Conkies, we were both like, I forget.
I forget.
Are these good awards or bad awards?
I know, because I'm fairly certain they start out as bad awards, because we were going to call them the donkeys for everyone who made stupid things. Because we did the apes awards, which sounded like bananas, and we did King Kong, so we did Conkies. So I'm pretty sure it was negative to start, but then it just sort of morphed into this, all right, we just make them awards. And be snarky
just
about it.
Signature name for it, right?
Yeah, I think so. So I think we softened up as the years went by, and which is interesting because I think we usually get worse as you get older.
You get more.
Yeah. So it's funny. So I said to you as a joke, I said, "Are they funny? Are they positive? Are they negative?" And you're like, "I don't know." I said, "How about they're all three?" So I came up with like one of each for mine because we're gonna do three each, right?
Yeah.
So I came up with a funny one, a positive one, and a negative one.
And so did I. I didn't think I was going to be able to do it, but I did.
Oh, awesome.
Cool, right to me.
All
right,
awesome. So we got our Conkies for the end of wrap-up year thing kind of thing. So you want me to start?
Sure, why not?
All right, so I'll start with my funny one.
And let's say right now that we're probably going to be like right on top of each other on one or two of these. So
you think?
And then we have six Conkies. Good chance because really only have four.
Okay.
I don't think so. But
it's possible. It's possible. All right, so my first one. Now, you remember way back when we were talking about, like, the things that athletes get for winning first place, second place, third place in their competitions. What?
You mean medals?
Yeah. Like, we were talking about... No. What I mean is, like, not just medals, but then we were talking about in wrestling, they got the belts and...
Oh, yes.
Remember that whole conversation we had?
Yeah, rings and, yeah.
And we were saying how cool it would be is if we won in poker, they gave you, like, the big world wrestling belt.
Yes.
And you got to come out with that and... So my first call goes out to the jewelry maker who almost made that dream come true for the main event bracelet this year.
Well, you really hated that bracelet, didn't you?
Oh, that bracelet. I mean, that thing, first it looked like, at first I thought, wow, it's like an iPhone on this bling bling thing. And then I said, wait a minute, that looks like a cowboy belt buckle. And then I'm like, belt buckle, belt, hey, this guy must have heard our podcast, or woman, whoever designed it, and said, we're going to come up with the biggest, gaudiest thing. I mean, it's beautiful, in a way, but I mean, it's like wearing an iPhone 6S on your wrist. If you had to wear that thing all the time, you'd have, remember the Family Guy episode when what's his name, the guy with the Chevy, the...
Quagmire.
Yeah, Quagmire discovers the internet.
Oh my gosh, I can only imagine.
And so one arm is much stronger than the other one.
Oh yes.
So I can imagine if you had to wear that bracelet all the time, you would have like a huge arm and then a small arm just because it's so big. I mean, you can't wear that thing comfortably. How could you? And you couldn't even like cover it up with like a shirt. So people wouldn't really... It's so big, yeah, you'd have to wear, like, a huge triple X sweatshirt.
Bracelet, right? Yeah.
Huh? Yeah. So I thought my first Conky goes to whoever it was that designed that bracelet. And I'm even, right now, as we're talking, I'm looking at a picture of it, because it's on the cover of our magazine for December. That thing is huge. It's literally bigger than a cowboy belt buckle. So,
you know, I wonder if it's going to become like the sash on, or bust on Survivor.
The what?
The bust on Survivor.
Oh, the buffs. Know, oh, yeah.
Where everybody kind of wears it differently or wherever they feel like wearing it. Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, the guys usually have it on their heads or on their necks. Women, it's like their bras, you know. So,
that's right.
Yeah. So it's, you know, maybe eventually, you know, that's going to be the new thing now. Instead of us asking, what kind of champion is he or she going to be? It's going to be, where are they going to wear that iPhone-sized bracelet?
by the way, wrapped up the best season ever of Survivor last night.
I already spoiled it to one person. I'm not going to spoil it to anybody else.
Yeah, it was unbelievable.
The best finale.
The best season ever.
Of the best
finale
season ever.
Yeah, it was really good.
Wow, okay, all right. So, I'm going to start my positive one, because that's how I am. I'm a positive guy.
You are a positive guy.
All right, so my conky for the gutsiest move by a poker room manager goes to Scott Poole. Now, we didn't really talk about this a lot. Actually, I don't think we talked about this on the show. It was mentioned in our magazine, so people probably saw it. But players outside of this incredibly competitive South Florida poker market probably won't understand why this took guts. But Poole, his director of poker operations at Gulfstream Park, a few months back, decided to quit playing the, quote, rent-a-player game that South Florida rooms have been doing since the limits here were raised in Florida. And what I mean by that is this is where, of course, this is where the $2 jackpot drop became cemented. You know,
yes.
It's always fun when I travel and talk to people. I'm like, oh, yeah, that dollar jackpot drop, I don't know where it goes. And I'm like, well, don't come to Florida because it's $2 here, buddy. And now it's like $2 everywhere, right?
Yep.
And, of course, what that meant is so now rooms blow out the promotion funds and pack the rooms with these 599 high hands every half hour, all this kind of crazy carnival stuff, right? Only to see those players bolt to the next room when the promotion fund runs dry. So really, players literally go to one room for a couple days. Everything is, all the money's gone, then they pick up and move to the next room, right?
Right.
So Scott Poole finally said, enough is enough. And bravely said he's going to plow that promotional money into the most generous player comps in the area, deciding that he values a steady stream of loyalty over the peaks and valleys of promotions. And I really thought that took a lot of guts. It's tough to do it in that market. If people don't understand the South Florida market, we're talking probably more than 300 poker tables within 90 minutes. And it is hyper, hyper competitive. Even more competitive than Vegas.
I was going to say, yeah, just like Vegas, those two are so common, and when it comes to the competitiveness, it's unbelievable, if not worse, because of that whole drop, and it's just remarkable. And I tell you what gives it, you know, like you said, the most courage about it is the fact that his job is got to be on the line all the time down there.
Oh, yeah.
And to make a move like that.
It's the toughest market to have that job in, I think.
Yep.
And the fact that so many of those managers have been there for a long time, I think, is really impressive on top of that. But then at that point, just to say, you know what, I'm done. We're going to do what's right for our players rather than what's, you know, playing this game. And, you know, this has been something that's been a big deal to him for a long time. Every time I go down and see him, I love hanging out with him and talking about this. And from the very first time, I think you probably went down with me the first time we met him.
Right.
He was talking about this. He's like, this is just crazy. And that was back before the $2 jackpot drop. Then that happened. He was the last one, I believe, in the area to actually go to the $2 jackpot drop. He held out as long as he could and finally decided, you know, hey, I'm just going to shrivel up here if I don't. So,
yeah.
So now it just took him, you know, several years, but finally to say, you know what, we're just going to line in the sand and see how this works out. So, you know, I had invited him to write a column for the magazine, and he seemed excited about it, but I haven't got it yet, so he's probably busy. But yeah, it definitely makes a big deal, and maybe we'll see. Maybe this will kind of translate beyond. And I think this is the kind of thing where players don't get, because they always get too excited about the bad beat jackpots or these 5-9, whatever the promotions are. People
yeah.
love them, and that's great. I mean, they serve a purpose. But if you're getting all that money in player comps, that means you're getting that money back if you play, right?
Right.
It doesn't come to that one guy like me that hops off the plane and plays one day and boom, hits a bad beat jackpot, gets back on the plane and leaves, right? You know, if you're putting that money into that jackpot fund, it should be coming back to you, right?
Right.
And player comps, then you don't have to, you know, get lucky with a hand to get it back. You're just going to get it back. The more you play, the more you get. So,
yep. Yeah.
Way it should be.
Good for him. All right, I'll stay on the positive train here.
You don't have to.
Phil Hellmuth, for all the...
Okay, hold on.
I know.
Stay on the positive. And
I know.
The words out of your mouth are filling.
I know. You know, for all the flack he gets for being a brat and all the crap he gets, you know, for, or used to get at least, for only winning Hold'em bracelets, he captured his 14th bracelet this year.
He did.
Second place is Doyle and Johnny with 10. And we can all remember the ESPN footage of him walking up to them when he had 9. And he's like, hi, guys. And he's waving with two hands open, showing like 10. Like, yes, I know you took the lead. But it's not even close. You know, in football, when you're up a touchdown and score again, they say you're pulling away. I'd say he's more than pulled away from two of the greatest players of all time. And, you know, he won't be caught at any time soon.
Not by them.
Not until I'm in diapers, at least. I just think that, and he won this one in Raz. So he's got like two Raz ones or something.
Fashion too, by the way.
Yeah.
Completing with a king and going to the mat with it.
Yeah. Awesome. I mean, we all know that he was a great player and he gets his ass busted all the time, like when he was on high stakes poker and he always get killed because he's not really the best cash game player ever. But I tell you what, man, there really is no better tournament player in history than this guy. I don't care. There's just no, I mean, he may not win mixed events all the time or whatever, but he's got 14 bracelets and he's still winning them when the fields are massive. It's just he can do it when they're small, he can do it when they're massive, he can do it old school, he could do it new school. I mean, I don't like the guy from watching him on TV. I mean, his personality and everything, but I mean, really, sometimes you got to wonder. But, you know, and away from the table, he's so generous with his time and everything. So
sure, yeah.
It's hard to really understand. But the persona he puts on TV, it's engaging for a few minutes, but I don't really like that. But the actual person he is and the ability he has, I'm giving him on Conky. Man, that's just amazing to me. 14 bracelets when the closest one to him has 10. And he had 9 when they had 10. Right, that's just amazing.
There. And remember, he had that year where he had like 2 or 3 second places.
Yes.
Too, right?
So yep.
Really,
he had that huge
20 by now.
He had that huge lead on, was it Rast, I think, Brian Rast, and
yeah.
Then he had like a 10-1 lead or an 18-1 lead or something, and he ended up losing that one, but that could have been another one. You're right, he could be close to 20 right now. So
amazing.
Hats off to him, even though, you know, we don't necessarily respect his personality at the table.
Yeah, to me, again, it's just his public persona. Again, I mean,
right.
I mean, he does these charity events, and the big one that we're involved in, he was there the last 2 years and has been really phenomenal. A different person there than
yep.
he is anywhere else. So,
yep.
You know, I guess I just hate that people have personas, public personas that aren't them, but it works for them. So.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. So my second Conky is going to be the Conky for Thanks for Nothing. And I couldn't decide. I stayed up late last night. I flipped coins. I, you know, drew straws. So I'm just going to give it co-winners or I guess co-losers.
Okay.
The Thanks for Nothing Conky is going to be split this year by lawmakers nationwide and daily fantasy sports companies.
Nice.
All right, despite some teases, can you hear us, California and Pennsylvania? No major poker legislation advanced anywhere in the United States this year, and certainly not at the federal level, where, of course, most of us are hoping it will happen someday. And partially to blame for this, the daily fantasy sports companies, who flooded TV stations with the ads blatantly inviting intense scrutiny, scrutiny that they knew their house of cards couldn't withstand, and now the incomes that former online poker players discovered since then are in peril, and the future of online poker has been unfairly blemished in the process.
Wow, that was pretty thorough. Sounds like you should write a column for the magazine.
Yeah, that's a lot of work, but let me think about that. But no, we were going into the show, and there was a lot of chatter that Pennsylvania was going to get online poker passed, and then all of a sudden, boom, shelved for next year.
Yeah, shelved.
And in California, they were working so hard on this year, and then they had, you know, that Poker Stars tour out there to build things, and then maybe next year.
Maybe next year.
And really nothing else. There might have been some smaller things around, but... nothing significant. And, I mean, all the oxygen about online gaming this year has been taken up by daily fantasy sports, which on a root level, I would love to play. I think it's fun. But gosh, the damage they've done.
Yeah.
Brutal.
Yeah. And it was like in plain sight. I mean, how do they not think how do they not have, like, lawyers that are advising them on this and saying, look, just stay under the radar or, you know, or something.
That's
so blatant.
I mean, they probably have lawyers saying, hey, I can win this argument if it gets to that point. What they needed was public relations experts and marketing.
Yeah.
And say, hey, yeah, you need to get the word out, but at some point, you're just poking the bear here.
Yeah.
And that bear is going to swat you, and that's exactly what happened. And those are the people to let put these companies down, I think.
All right. Well, then I guess I'll go to my negative one. I'm glad you saved the funny one for last, so that we're not just dumping on everything. But, all right, my final Conky goes to the Poker Hall of Fame.
Awesome! I knew you were going to get a swipe in there.
Yeah. For continuing to induct just two players per year, regardless of qualifications, and for not ever considering us, and I mean by us, Antiup, as voters. I've petitioned them.
Sounds like we're bitter.
I've petitioned them in the past, and I've had conversations with people about it, and they're always saying, let me see if I can get someone. And I just gave up. They just never have considered us. We have the largest national poker magazine in the country. We've been around for 10 years in the poker scene, one way or another. We've been to the World Series in one capacity every year since 08, 07. I mean, it's just ridiculous that, you know, the Hall of Fame just continues to induct just two players. Doesn't matter what their qualifications are. If 25 people are qualified and deserve to be in, still only get two in. And then on top of it, we don't even get a say in it. So, you know what? You can have my negative conky for 2015, guys.
I like them apples.
I like them apples.
Oh, man. All right, so my last conky is the conky for the worst success in keeping a weekly poker cash streak intact that most fans don't even recognize as being legit anymore anyways.
That's a long title.
It is. Boy. And I got it all out without stumbling over the words, so I can get a conky for that as well, too. And drum roll, that goes to Antiup.
Antiup gets one, baby.
So see, we turned the conkies all into us.
Yes.
It's all about us, right?
It's all about us.
I certainly meant well when I tried to get enough shows in the can to cover us while sailing from country to country to country to country to country to country, wait for it, to country aboard the Antiup Poker Cruise, but I forgot to take off my shoes and miscounted by one. Then Cosenza, to his credit, came to the rescue, only to see his efforts foiled by the turn-of-the-century audio equipment that fan favorite Mike Faso uses. And then, of course, we followed up those beautiful efforts with our normal phone-it-in show from the cruise ship. So, to all of our fans, all seven of you still listening, thanks for sticking with us.
Oh, man, you make it worse than it is, though. And I should get a conky for blowing the one opportunity I had to bust your chops. Figuring you knew already that I had done the show with him, and I was when someone from your wife's comment in the or the terminal. And I should have been able to bust your chops. I was waiting all week to do it, and I'm like, 2 weeks to do it, really? And then I blew it, and I'm like, yeah, you know, so Faso did the show, and you're like, what? What? I'm like, damn.
It still took me some time to process the fact, why is Faso, one, two, three, oh! There it is!
And, ladies and gentlemen, this is the person who does our books.
I don't do our books, QuickBooks does it.
Well, I like to remind everyone that you're inputting like the numbers.
This stuff out, yeah.
Very little difference between calculating how many shows you need to do for 3 weeks and how many numbers you have to put into the QuickBooks account.
Oh, man. But I mean, on a serious note on that, I really do appreciate the fans sticking with us through all that. You know, consistency is important, I think, and we try to be as consistent as possible in everything we do. You know, our tour and the magazine and cruises. And the poker cast is the hardest thing for us to do that because of the travel and things like that. So the fact that you guys keep coming back and give us a pass, I almost feel like, you know, you guys are like the Godfather. Our fans are all the Godfather, right? So they're like, oh, I'm sorry, we'll do it again. Can I get a pass this time? One time, my son.
We just got to keep having our daughters have wedding days. You can't.
How can I say no?
Can't say no to us. All right, we've got some Antiup updates here. Pechanga Resort and Casino in California and Ho-Chunk Gaming Wisconsin Dells are the latest rooms to commit to hosting an event for Antiup's Restock the Shelves Charity Food Bank Initiative with Blue Shark Optics on January 18th, and many participating rooms have added event details, including extra chips and raffle tickets for donations of food and cash. Get details on all of our Restock events, including how you can volunteer for Team Antiup by visiting antiupmagazine.com/restock, and encourage your favorite poker room to host an event, too. Also, 'tis the season to be giving, and we'd love to have you all... what? We love if you were.
Let me take over.
You read it.
Tap out. Tis the season to be giving, and we love if all of you were to give us some fresh listener spotlights, call the floors, and hands of the week, because all those shelves need to be restocked, too. Look what I just did there.
That's brilliant.
Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. Call our hotline at 206-424-6145. Or post in the Antiup group discussions at pokerradius.com. We need your help.
Yeah, okay. I could have done that.
Nah, I don't think he could have. If he could have done that, you would have done that.
Did you ever see the do you ever watch Cheers when you were a kid?
Of course.
Remember when Ted hires Ted Danson? You know, Sam hires a like an agent who gets him all these commercials, but he's also sleeping with her.
No.
All right, so there's a commercial where Louis Tiant, who is a Red Sox pitcher,
wow, yeah.
Right? Louis Tiant's trying to do the pitch for the beer in the commercial, and he keeps screwing it up. So Sam Malone walks up to him and goes, "Now pitching for Peel's beer is Sam Malone," and he comes in and saves.
Oh,
and he goes,
"Was that actually Peel's beer?"
Yeah, and he goes, "Another save."
Love Peel's beer.
No, I don't think it was Peel's. I think it was like Fields or something. I don't know, but Fields.
Sure
I think it was.
Just pull Peel's out of your ass.
I don't know. It's something. It sounds like Peel's. That's why I think it's Fields beer or something.
Well,
but
Peel's is pretty popular up in the Northeast.
Well, I think we need to get Peel's on board to sponsor the show.
Yeah.
Because you just, you know, another save, so.
Another save.
So I'm afraid to read this next one because it's so long because I screwed up the first one, but I'll give it a shot. Each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline, 206-424-6145, or emails us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Four and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This week's prize is 1 month of free poker strategy videos from One Hand at a Time, home of poker instruction videos online. NEUP listeners save $30 by registering at onehandatatime.com/NEUP. Comes from Paul Rolston. He says, "So I've been away for 12 weeks, and I'm playing catch up on all the episodes. I have a major bone to pick with you." Would that be like a femur?
That's a major bone, right?
That's a major bone, yeah. He says, "In the Phil Ivey / Pokemon episode, I was literally yelling at my iPod." Oh, that's not good talking to inanimate objects. I think we got to...
I'm surprised somebody still has an iPod.
I know. What is that?
Yeah.
"Seconds after talking about how the best poker player in the world has been very publicly demonstrated to be at best unethical, at worst a criminal, and that is what the judge decided, you then spend 10 minutes lamenting the fact that people still perceive poker as being a gangsta game, and not once did you make the connection. No matter what Ivy did or did not do, no matter on what the outcome of the court case... When the world press is carrying front page stories about the best poker player in the world being accused of / caught cheating, it perpetuates every bad stereotype about our game and does incalculable harm to the game at a time when it is struggling to maintain the momentum of the fast-fading poker boom. The fact is this, even if what Phil did was not illegal, it was unethical, manipulative, and had the look of and feel of corruption. Like the Supreme Court definition of porn, he looks and feels like a crook, and that makes him a crook. And when we say he is the best player in the world, we are saying that our game is a gangsta game. I have lost count of the morons at the table who have told me how they think it's fine for Phil to take the casino's money, all the while sitting at empty tables in undersupported poker rooms that increasingly only host the same old faces. I have lost count of the number of people who, when I say I am playing poker that night, look at me as if to say, I didn't realize you were that kind of person. That is the damage that Phil did to our game. And that is why I can never, ever look at him as anything other than a net loss to the game. And y'all totally missed the chance to say all that. It was like not betting the nuts on the river, really."
Ouch.
Oh, jeez.
No, Paul's been a long-time listener. And actually, he and I think the first time he talked to me about Phil Ivey, we had several emails back and forth explaining. And then same time with us, too. He actually had sent this about 2 months ago. We just now... finally get around to put on the show. So we've had a good conversation about it, and I think we finally got to the point where we are almost in agreement with each other, but willing to accept the what we consider the shortcomings of the other person's argument.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But what I can explain to him is, and Paul's from across the pond, too, in the UK. So the first thing I told him is that, obviously, libel and slander laws are more forgiving in the UK, which is why they have all those delicious tabloids that we don't have over here. I mean, we have to settle for, like, National Enquirer, which is like, "Hey, Bat Boy is engaged to Jennifer Aniston." Stuff that's just ridiculously impossible, right? There, it's all like, "Hey, is Prince Harry and Pippa getting together?" That's good stuff, right?
Yeah.
And they can get away with that because they have lower standards than we do here in the States. So I'm not trying to fall back on a legal answer to his question here, but, you know, you and I have been longtime career journalists, right?
Mm-hmm.
So with that becomes the burden and the blessing of understanding libel and slander laws, right?
Right.
So the blessing is that we know them, so therefore we intuitively avoid them, right?
Right.
So I think it's not like we sat around and talked, hey, we can't talk about ID this week because of this, right? It's just that's just the way we've been brought up, right?
Right.
In this business. The burden of it is that we can't just talk about we know the rules, so we can't just talk about what we want to talk about, right?
Right.
So we have this built-in filter, I think, I guess is part of it. So I think we're a little cautious, at least I know I am, when talking about folks that have been, particularly in civil litigation, or even just, or you know, again, I think I've talked about this before, too. I'm one of those people that hates the fact that if you get arrested for something, your mug is in the newspaper the next day.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that point, everybody thinks you're guilty, even though you haven't gone through the due process yet, right? So I'm a little sensitive to getting on to that too much. But beyond that, I think, and this is kind of where Paul and I had a lot of our good discussions here, is what he talks about was the, you know, if it wasn't illegal, it at least was unethical, manipulative, and had the look and feel of corruption. You know, I get that. I get that argument. You know, I think edge shorting, we talked about this before, it's not something I'm going to do ever. It's not something, not the way I want to beat the casino. But that's a judgment call for me. You know, we're all different. And obviously, Phil Ivey feels that edge shorting is perfectly acceptable, and there's probably some of our listeners that feel like it's acceptable. Obviously, it is by Paul's comment that he's lost count of the people at the table telling him that, right?
Right.
So I think it's not that we're not just calling him out on this. I mean, he's right. I mean, I don't know how many front pages Phil Ivey made on over here in the States. I'm going to guess he got on more front pages than Great Britain than he did over here.
Right.
But he's right. It's that, you know, people see him as one of the best poker players in the world. Casual, lay people, right? See him as the best poker player in the world. And the story, no matter how you read it, to somebody, that same people are going to say, hey, this guy's cheating. There's no way around that, right?
Right.
So, you know, to what degree are we supposed to call him out for that? I don't know.
I don't either. I think that there might be a little bit of... to me, when I read Paul's letter over again, it feels like he's going a little much on the, you know, the exaggeration here. I mean, as far as...
Don't go pissing him off again. I don't have another 7 hours of emails.
What I mean is, like, people looking at him and thinking that he is a bad person.
Well, we get it, right?
I don't think people are really looking at him to think he's a bad person because of Phil Ivey, because he decides he wants to play poker. And people,
I don't know about that.
Count. I mean, I think it's a little bit of an exaggeration. I don't know. And to think that... I just think that whether what Phil did was right or wrong, whether it was ethical or not, whether just in the fact that he says, and a judge decided that he was a criminal. Well, a judge would decide that every person playing poker online is a criminal too, but we would know that it's not really illegal to play online poker. But does that mean now we're all dirty?
Well, that's actually a good point, because we're always going to argue for online poker, right?
And the right.
Same people are going to say that that's just nasty. I mean, young kids are running up credit card debts and families are being destroyed. So it doesn't really matter at that point, right?
Right.
This kind of goes back to what we were talking about a couple weeks ago where, you know, I think we lost some of that argument. So we just have to accept it. I don't think we just have to accept the Phil Ivies of the world. I mean, I think we were pretty strong in our opinion that neither us believe in edge shorting or doing this. But it's tough. But, you know, I'll say this, too. I mean, his comments about, you know, people looking down on him, I mean, they do kind of hit home. You know, the last week or so, I went to a couple events. I went to I don't do Christmas parties, but I got invited to one at a swanky gated community. So I kind of like, I got good wine, right?
Right.
So I went there and met a couple of people. These are all people that are very well established in the world, of course, right? And so they asked me what I do, and, you know, I said publishing, right? You know, I didn't say, I chose not to say poker media or poker there because, and then obviously I'm a member of the Chamber of Commerce in town here too, and I had an event there and I went. And there I'm always saying, you know, what company do you work for? I'm like, Andy at Poker Media. And then you get two responses. You either get, that's exciting, tell me more about it, or you get the, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that, it's never a positive, right?
Right.
It's a, ooh. Okay, that sounds great. I'm going to go refill my drink, right?
Yeah.
So I think he's right. There is that sense of it's always tough to get away from, and then sometimes we decide not to take it head on, like I did at the Chris Barney. I'm like, oh, I'm publishing. Okay, great. And then if they ask, then it gets into it more. But, you know, you can kind of get away with it in casual conversation. And that's tough. So I think he's right on that.
All right, let's go back a minute. You said that he was from the UK. Correct me if I'm wrong, but gambling is ubiquitous there. You can just walk into any place and lay a bet down anywhere over there.
I don't believe that's the case. I think you actually have to register to go into a casino there.
Right, but it's a lot easier to gamble over there. You can make bets. There are sports books and everything there. There are all kinds of gambling.
True.
I mean, it's way more easier to gamble over there than it is over here.
That doesn't mean people are accepting of it.
I know, but you can't tell me that.
Thousands of casinos.
It's part of the life there. It's culture there. I can't imagine that.
People would argue it's the culture of the United States as well, too.
Yeah, but, I mean, you have to go to specific states where they have casinos. It's everywhere in the UK, is it not?
There are only two states in the United States where you can't legally gamble on something. And that's Utah. No one in Utah, other than O'Malley, wants to gamble on anything. And then Hawaii, and they've got so much else to do there, they don't need to worry about it, right? So, I mean, I know what you're trying to say, but I just think it's just as ubiquitous here as it is there.
It's just a smaller
landmass there.
I can't imagine that. It just seems like he's blowing this out of proportion to me. I'm sorry. I just don't. I mean, I can understand that he didn't like the fact that we didn't tie the two together, but again, we have our reasons for not tying the two together. It's not that we missed the opportunity. We just didn't tie the two together because that's not what we were doing. You know, again, if a casino allows you to do something and they want your money and they're doing everything they can to get your money and he found a way to do it, you know, I don't know if it was cheating. Unethical, okay, but is it unethical if they're letting you do it?
Well, I wouldn't even go unethical. I think you're right. I mean, this is kind of the argument that we're having, and he has it with his buddies, too, is that it's, you know, he's using the rules to his advantage.
And so, he wasn't doing it in poker.
I don't know if that's unethical. It's certainly not illegal, I don't think, although that's why we have some court cases there. But it does have a certain smell to it, right?
Regardless. Sure. But the other thing, too, is he wasn't doing it in poker.
No. Well, but I mean, no one... But these front-page stories that we didn't have here, but he has over there, aren't saying, you know, world-famous Baccarat player.
Right.
They're saying poker player, because that's who he is.
No, I understand.
He happens to be playing something else.
But he's not cheating at poker.
Right, but I think, again, we're talking about people that aren't using great critical thinking skills and putting this stuff together, that it's just easy in your mind to say, hey, poker player caught cheating. It doesn't matter. They don't have to read the story to find out that it's Baccarat, and they have to figure out what Baccarat is and how that's different. It doesn't matter. It's all perception, again.
I know. I'm just saying that for me to take him to task when I'm using critical thinking... Because Paul wanted me to doesn't mean
I'm going to. That's a fair point. Yeah.
You understand? I'm being critical of him, but I'm also being critical of the situation, understanding what really happened, rather than letting it be this gangsta game that he's trying to say that people are perceiving it that way. That's something that happens, but we didn't perceive it that way. If I have to get into the shoes of every single person who listens to our show and react the way they want me to react, I'm not going to do the show.
Well, it's possible, too, but I mean, that's why we have good feedback so for folks, too. So
yeah.
Rehashing.
But I understand
where actually,
we get
criticized more than anything for, and probably could say the same thing about Paul's email here, too, about not being sharp enough on things. Because
right.
we're trying to explain it to a wider audience of different views, right?
Yeah. And, you know, we've got six segments of a show. We got an hour to get them all in. We got things to talk about, things to do, things to mention, keep up with news, and then also do poker. We got so many things we're doing.
Star Wars movies to see.
That's right. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that if we wanted to just take one topic and talk about it for an hour, I would imagine people wouldn't like that.
Anyway. Some people would.
Yeah, I mean, but
most wouldn't.
People who've listened to the show for all these many years, you know, then all of a sudden.
But even if
convert.
We had an hour to talk about this, I still don't think we're going to get to the point that Paul wanted us to.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of the thing, right?
Yeah, I agree.
And that's fine. You know, but that's why we invite those different opinions on the show. So, you know, could have easily just clicked the delete on Paul's email. But
yeah.
No, we want to talk about that.
No,
kind of
I want
stuff.
To talk about it. Yeah.
Challenges.
Yeah. All right. Find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been. Email us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com and we'll have Hollywood Casino Toledo Director of Poker, Elliot Schechter, tell you how he would have ruled. This week's prize is an upgraded membership to PokerRadius.com, poker's best social networking site and home of the Annie Up group discussions. Comes from Kyle. says, we're playing a 1-2-5 mix game, 5-card Big O PLO8 and 4-card PLO in a Michigan charity poker room.
Why? Why?
The current game...
Omaha 8 on O'Malley's move last week. Now we've got Big O PLO8 and 4-card PLO in the same game. Why, people?
I know. I think that's not really named properly either. I think it's 5-card Big PLO8 is what you should call it.
Well, I mean, 5-card and Big O is...
Big O is 5-card.
Right, yeah.
So exactly. It's redundant. And then
redundant. There we go.
The O means Omaha, so you don't have to say PLO. Just say Big PLO8. Yeah. That's all you got to say. I think.
I don't know. But people call it Big O, so.
All right, so Big O.
But here's the thing. I don't know if anybody plays it this way either, so never mind. But
so yeah. We're at Showdown. The button who has about 120 bucks in the pot and loses
you
the hand.
Over the current game is 5-card Big O PLO.
I did. I said it already. You didn't hear me?
Yeah, but then you went on this thing about how it should just be Big PLO.
I know, but I said the current game was Big Card Big O. I already said that.
Continue on.
It says, at the Showdown, the button who has about $120 in the pot and loses the hand says, oh, I thought we were playing Omaha High. I only have 4 cards. The floor is called and tells the button he can take 100 bucks out of the pot because he didn't know what game it was.
Right, people can't see this, but my head is shaking so hard.
Right, I know. I say it's the player's responsibility to know what game it is and how many cards he should have. The final decision is to give the player 60 bucks from the pot because it was half his fault and half the fault of the dealer for not making it clear what game we are playing, which I still think is wrong, but me and the player are good friends who play all the time, so it wasn't a big sweat to me. I then collect the rest of the money. To me, if I was in a less friendly atmosphere, I think the two absolute rulings are, one, I win the whole pot at Showdown, it's the player's fault, or two, we give all the money back to all players involved and play another hand. Am I wrong? Isn't this weird?
All right, so Elliot is a professional tournament poker manager, director. We can't waste his time on carnival games like this. So there's so many things wrong. Starting with these games that people are playing, the fact that they're splitting the games into why do you need to play one round of 5-card Big O Pillow 8 or whatever you want to call it.
All right.
And then switch to 4-card PLO. Why? I don't get it. It's not like horse where there are different disciplines and things like that. I don't get it. But then the whole, oh my God, I can't even imagine. Again, this is where it's tough because if I'm in this poker room, I'm obviously wearing my ante up stuff and I can't say anything. And I'm going to have to get up at the table here and just go outside and scream.
Yeah.
I cannot imagine any reasonable person who's in a floor. And this is probably why these Michigan charity rooms are getting so much scrutiny up there now.
Right.
To come over and say, oh, you didn't know? Sorry. Here, just grab a stack out of the pot and say, here you go.
Just take one card, put it in your pocket, and go, oops, I only have 4 cards. Give me half my money back when I see the losing hand.
You know how many poker rooms you might get shot in? And I'm not trying to turn us into a gangster game. We just got through that whole thing, right? But there are literally some places where you might get beat up if you take... The floor would not make it out of the room that night.
Not without security.
If you're taking money out of a pot because some idiot doesn't know what game it is.
That was... I think I would... If I was wearing my Annie Up shirt, I think I would stand up, take my shirt off, and then start yelling.
I'd go to the gift shop. I'm like, do you have a disguise I can wear?
Do you have a different t-shirt I can throw
glasses,
on over this?
A big nose and a mustache. Thank you. Because I got to go back and put a smackdown on some people.
There is no way in hell that... Oh, I'm sorry. You didn't understand what was going on? No. Significant action. You have cards. That's your fault. Sorry.
Wow.
You lose the pot.
Yeah. So yeah, Kyle, you were right on number one. You win the whole pot. This guy's an idiot. He has to learn this lesson the hard way.
That is not even cool.
And the other one, I am sure at some point somebody would say, hey, do over! And a bunch of people would be like, oh, sure, whatever. Ain't happening on my watch.
Yeah, that's just
rulings weird. Aren't supposed to be made to make everybody at the table feel good. You're not giving everybody a participation ribbon at the poker table. You're playing poker. So rules are rules. Understand them and pay the penalty when you screw up. And we screwed up here. The dealer screwed up here. The floor screwed up. And the player, more than anybody else, screwed up here.
You know, what's funny is you couldn't even make this stuff up. Like if you sat down and said, let's make up a phony call the floor and try to come up with the... I couldn't even come up with this. That the guy comes over and grabs a stack out of the pot and says, ah, here, take it. You didn't know what was going on. Thanks a lot, buddy. I could never even come up with that. Oh my god, that's ridiculous.
Head is just shaking. Wow.
Well, you know what? We got to know O'Malley's move this week, so that'll help us.
Unless it's No Limit Omaha 8.
Yeah, and it's No Limit Omaha 8, another game. That, why are you playing this game? Here we go.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we're still in that same 50-cent, $1 No Limit Omaha 8 game. The table hasn't changed. Neither the players nor the action. Timid pre, slight aggression post. Our stack has dipped a little as we sit with 150. The small blind posts, we post our big blind. The action is folded around to the cutoff, who calls. Small blind calls, and we look down at the 8 of hearts, 5 of clubs, 4 of clubs, deuce of clubs. Okay, so this isn't a great hand, but it does have some potential, and we can check, so we do. The flop gives us reason for pause, as the 8 of spades, 5 of hearts, 4 of hearts comes down. This is an interesting flop. We've hit 3 pair, and currently have 6 full house outs. Of course, only 2 remaining 8s give us the nut high. The cutoff is an older gentleman who seemingly has the game figured out. However, he got caught running a big bluff earlier and has since turned over another bluff. Other than that, he's shown down nut hands most of the time. We've seen about 7 of his other hands. He sits with $95. The small blind in this case seemingly is inconsequential. The small blind checks, and it's to us. So, we have 1 player to act behind us and 3 pair. Are we betting or are we checking? What's the move?
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. This week's prize is a 30-minute telephone lesson and workbook from Thomas Gallagher Casino Seminars, which specializes in poker odds and math at poker911.net. And it comes from a longtime listener, Michael Paul from Southern California. Looking forward to going out there, getting ready to book my tickets for Antiup Poker Cruise out of L.A. Next month. Yep. So. I like when he says, he says, I was playing 1-2 yesterday at one of the local casinos. I found myself with 2 spots I like your opinions on. Neither hand of the week, since both decisions for both hands happened on the flop. Guess what, Mike? We're going to talk about both of them.
Wow.
Combine them into one, right?
Wow.
We'll show you.
Yeah.
Don't send us something if you don't think we're going to talk about it.
That's right.
We're going to be desperate enough to talk about it.
We're going to be thorough enough to tie this into some other topic that we didn't tie in earlier and avoid emails.
But no, I mean, sometimes we have a situation where it's very simple and we talk for 30 minutes on it, right? So right. Maybe that'll be the case with both these, and then you're going to get really pissed off at me because we're already at 48 minutes. But.
We are at 44 minutes, so we've got 15 minutes to do this or I'm cutting you off.
All right, he says, I started a new game and bought in for $100 since that's what everybody else bought in for. I slowly built that stack up to about $55. See, now I like that. See what he did there?
Yeah, I get it.
Slowly built that starting stack down to 55. Topped off for another 100. So we had 155. Now we're sitting. I was sitting with 530. Wow. I don't know how that happened. He says, I've never played with the villain before, and he'd been playing for about an hour. There didn't be anything special about his play to this point. He was up and down a bit from his initial $100 buy-in. A couple hands before he and I got involved. He called all in a flush draw and doubled up when it got there on the river. He doubled up to maybe 320 or so. When he won that hand, he stated that he had to win one eventually. Of course he did. He's 2 seats to my right, and I have position on him, but we're both in early to mid position. He limps. I can't really remember what the guy to my right does, so it doesn't matter. I look down, I have 8-8. I just limp to go set mine, and I figure small raise will typically do nothing to thin the field. A couple other people limp in, and we see a flop 5 or 6 handed. That flop is 4-7-8 rainbow. Guy in early position throws out $10. Somebody folds. The villain raises to 30, comes to me, and I push out a stack of 100. Folds around to the villain. He thinks for a few seconds and goes all in for 200 more. I start to think. I'm very aware of the don't go broke in a limp pot, and technically if I call, I won't go broke since I haven't covered, but I want to tank on this one pretty long for me. I was thinking about what he could have and how he could have played the hands. I think about what hands he would have had, keeping in mind that we just saw him call most of his stack with only a flush draw that got there. Whew, take a break. I, of course, instantly think he could have 5-6 in a limp pot. This would be 16 specific combinations that I'm behind to. He could have a set of 4s or a set of 7s. This would be 12 hand combinations I'm ahead of. Could have 2 pair, 7 or 4, or 8 and 4. Pretty unlikely since he was in early position, even if it was a limp pot. But who knows? Even though I have two of the eights, he still could have 7-8, though giving four combinations. Would he have raised all in with any pair between nines and jacks? Maybe. I don't think he's got queens, kings, or aces, because there's no preflop raise, so I don't consider those. But if he has nines, tens, or jacks, that's another 18 hands. He might also do this on a draw. In the end, I just think I'm ahead more of his possible holdings than I'm behind to. I looked at it up after into the fact, and you'll flop a straight 1.3% of the time, so that means he doesn't flop a straight 98.7% of the time. He's a math whiz.
Jeez.
Because even if I did get unlucky and I'm up against straight, I have 10 outs to fill up, so in the end, I call. And, of course, he has 5-6. I don't fill up and lose a $550-ish pot. Was this a mistake? He says, I'm not sure. I think I'm ahead of more hands than I'm behind. It's roughly 200 more for me to call and win 400-ish. That's already the pot counting as all in, so I'm getting 2-to-1 call. And even if I know I'm a 3-to-1 underdog, but I may not be behind.
Whew. Wow, that's a lot.
It might be all we get through.
It's the end of the show. Well, you know what? Here's the thing. It's a situation, so we've gotten him in this situation, so I guess we have to react to the situation we're in. But I vehemently disagree with limping with 8-8. It'd be one thing if somebody raised and you call the raise and you're hoping to set mine and then bust somebody who's clearly got something like jacks, queens, kings, something like that.
Right.
It's another thing to have people limp in. You have a made hand. You have a pretty good hand already. And when he says that he'd raise, typically wouldn't thin the field, that's not why you're raising all the time. You're not always raising to thin the field. You're also raising to give a persona. They don't know you have 8-8. But if you're making a good enough raise, this 5-6 isn't in the hand. I just don't think it is. Especially, if he said, I think he said a small raise wouldn't do it. But why a small raise? Why not a regular raise? Why not a good raise? Why not, hey, people limped already ahead of you, so now you have every conceivable reason for making a much larger raise without giving away the strength of your hand. You know, and normally when you open raise, you want to keep all your raises the same. But if people have limped in ahead of you, now your raise could be whatever you want to make it, because they'll say, oh, he raised so much because of all the limpers, not because he only has 8-8. So now you've gotten most of the people out that are going to play hands like 5-6, 7-4, 4-7, 8-7, whatever, and 5-6. Those hands probably go away instead of going, if I have 8-8 and I flop a set and it's that wet and it's six-handed, I am positive that if one guy goes 10, another guy goes 30, somebody's got the straight there because they're protecting their hand. I don't think 7-8 re-raises to 30, and if it does, well, you got him crushed. But I don't know, if I guess I probably still call the way he called because of the fact that this guy did go in on a draw, although what draw is he, you know, I don't think there's no draw here for him. He's not shoving on a gut shot. He's, you know, or he's not shoving on 9-10, I don't think, because you have fewer outs in a straight, and he's already shown that someone's going.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. If somebody's going to shove over top of us when we're the third raise.
We would be the third raise.
We're the second raise.
Or second raise with third bet. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's 9-10. So when that guy goes all in for 200 more, I believe I'm beat. Then it's whether or not we think the 10 outs are enough to call to get, you know, because you're getting, what, 2-to-1 on your money. I don't think it's really the right call. It's just hard to let go of top set and hold him. It'd be one thing if it was Omaha, but in hold him, it's hard to let it go. I have such a problem with the way it was played pre-flop that it's hard for me to, I don't know. I see all of his math here, and I hear all the stuff that he talked about with the possible hands combinations that he beats. Given all that, if I'm really thinking about all that table, I probably still call. It's a tough laydown, top set. Even if you know what I mean? That's a tough laydown.
It's tough, too, when you're trying to figure out what he has. You know, I mean, obviously, 5-6 is what immediately comes to mind, and a limp pot, that makes a lot of sense. And then, but it could also be a set of fours. It could also be a set of sevens, right?
Right.
And it could also be 8-7. I mean, I think you're right. I think he's right. 7-4 and 8-4 are not combinations here that I would expect. I don't think.
Unless they're in the blinds, but he wasn't, so.
Yeah, so we're down to three legitimate hands that we can beat, and then a small percentage of the time this guy's just an idiot bluffing or whatever. But because you start talking about, in fact, actually when I was emailing Michael, I was thinking about, yeah, the nines, tens, and jacks make sense. But now you look at it now, and nines, tens, jacks don't make sense here.
No.
For that fourth bet. You know, it has to be a really good main hand. And of those, we beat three. And there's one that we just killed. But we do have the redraw, so that's what you have to figure out. And I think you're right. We don't have the rolling math to do it here. But I think preflop, too, I think what's interesting is, you know, when we talk about set mine, and you can still set mine with a raise, can't you?
Sure.
If you make this 10 to go or something like that, you're still going to get four or five people to come, and now you've just built a bigger pot for your the mining, right?
Right.
Plus, you have the option at that point then of showing that you've raised, so you could take control even if you don't. So it does give you options, right? It doesn't necessarily preclude the fact that you're still set mining. Obviously, the idea of set mining is to get it as cheaply as possible and get some stacks, so I get that. But I think I'm with you on that. I think the bunch of limpers there, when people don't seem very excited about the pot. And really, if I have eights, too, I want to find out right away if some idiot's limping with aces or kings.
Right.
Which, if you're going to raise that, you're probably going to find out, right?
Right. If they limped with aces, another guy limps, it gets to you. And now you've got three limpers at $2 each, that's six. And you're generally, in a live game like this, you'll make it 12 on a 1-2. Now you're making an 18 or 20. Somebody comes over the top of you over 60 who limped. Okay, your eights are beat, and you can let it go. Now you've only lost 20 instead of your stack.
Right.
You know, or whatever. But you're right. I think you're going to find out some more information. I don't think if you make it 20, I really don't think 5-6 is coming along. I just don't. And if they did come along, more power to them. But at that point, it's an easier decision to you. Because if you made it 5, if you made it 20 to go preflop,
right,
and that guy calls, you're thinking he can't have 5-6, and you're making your decision a lot easier.
Yeah, it's less likely. Way right. Less likely he has 5-6 than in this situation.
Right. So then when he does have it, you're like, oh, damn, I just didn't think that guy was capable of that. Now I've got more information on him, but maybe I'll hit my 10 outs, you know. I think that the preflop was the mistake here. It really was. I feel like it was. I don't know. I could be wrong.
And I think people hate when I say this, but I really do believe it, too. We have chips to play with here, right? So that kind of helps a little bit in these decisions where we're trying to figure out where we are. And you don't know for sure. I mean, there's probably a lot of our listeners out here like, oh, my God, it's got to be 5-6. That's the only thing you can have. And yeah, that's fair. But we have chips to play with here, right? So, you know, it's a leverage thing. So, you know, you take a shot here. And if you're wrong, at least you've got outs. You always have outs here,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And he forgot to factor in the other two eights as well, too, right? Or the other eight, I mean.
The other eight.
So there's at least one more out, too. So, I don't know.
I think that... I don't think he's really wrong for calling the all-in. But at the same time, if he did narrow it down to 5-6, and you knew exactly he had 5-6, I think he could fold. And the way he played it, you probably could have figured out he had 5-6. He only beat three hands. You know, the three hands that you thought were legitimate, you know, you'd only beat three of them. And a lot more beat you if, you know, 5-6 beats you. I mean, you know, as far as preflop, I mean. So, I don't know. It's tough. That's a tough call. I think if I did do all the work that he did, I would have called. But if it was just in the moment, I don't know what I would have done. Probably still would have called. It's top set, you know. Yeah, it's hard to lay that hand down. It really is.
Yeah.
Well, what's all the right. Second one?
Well, let's see. Why don't we just save the second one for next week?
You sure?
Yeah, I'm reading over it now, and it's going to take a while. So we'll do a part two of the Michael Paul situation of the week.
Well, by saving me this time, then you've allowed me to go to Fandango and buy tickets for Star Wars, so I appreciate that.
Well, hope you get the same show I'm at.
I'm Chris Cassetta.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.